Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we are back for episode 45 of Digital Divination. We are like 90% of the way to 50 now.
Oh yeah. Oh wow. That'll be kind of neat.
Yeah, that's like kind of been my goal, is if we get to 50, I think we're okay.
I think the fact we've gotten to 45 is okay. I would still call this a resounding success, even if we couldn't do it from here on out.
Yeah, it's been fun enough. I think that just seems like a milestone, you know. So I'm counting down to that. That's why I kind of make note of this each time. So
it is. I'll tell you a secret Paizo thing, quasi secret Paizo thing, because I work on the Pathfinder Adventure Paths, and right now I'm doing the development for numbers 180 through 186. That's the Blood Lords adventure path that we've announced, shaping up to be great. We've been doing some of the future planning, and we've realized that I think February of 2024 will be our issue 200 of Pathfinder. And we were thinking about, well, could we do something big and fun for that? And Eric Mona, the publisher, said, well, we did something kind of big and fun, a double length issue or a bonus length issue for episode number 100, and nobody kind of cared.
Oh, no.
So either we sort of resolve ourselves to the fact that when it comes to episode 200, even fewer people will care.
Yeah,
or we kind of try to make some big thing out of it. And how might we make something out of it? In the episode 100 landed as volume 4 of a 6-part adventure path.
Right.
And so having it start kind of just be, oh, here's this awesome thing, but it's in the middle of this ongoing story that you kind of have to be playing to care much about is a little bit awkward.
You had to juggle things a little bit better, right? To have shorter ones and longer ones. No.
Which now we do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
It still doesn't help because it's not 200 is neither divisible by 3 nor 6, right?
Right.
So it still doesn't put us in necessarily a right spot, but we're thinking about it. So milestones are important, perhaps more important to the people who are experiencing them rather than the consumers. So
yes.
Keep that in mind. Yes. When we get to number 50, we can be very happy about it, but our listeners will be like, wait, what? I don't, it's just these guys rattling on some more.
Yeah, and if we rattle on for a double length, I don't know if it's going to make it any better.
That's true.
Oh, man. Ooh. So how's your week been? It's been a while since I chatted with you.
Oh, yeah. Things have been really good. I think that there has been some of this planning that I just talked about at work has been, it's been a big push that I've had from the beginning, saying, hey, we need to be planning kind of what we're doing further out than we are. We need to Marvel Cinematic Universe up this whole place, right?
Right.
And
have
big events, and let's do crossovers, and let's be thinking 4 or 5 years ahead of time. We haven't gotten there yet. But not only are we on the Pathfinder side that I'm responsible for planning much further out than we have ever as a company in the past, but that's kind of carried over to Starfinder, who's doing some of that as well. And so they're looking much further out than you might expect about, okay, what are we going to be providing? What kind of stories are we going to be telling? What, you know, what do we still need? And that's neat to see. It's neat to have a lot of real advanced planning going on. So that's fun.
Yeah, you know, that's real typical for small to medium-sized businesses. So I'm in my day job, I do a lot of consulting with businesses. You get so wrapped up in the day-to-day operations that you don't get to do long-term or strategic planning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and because of that, everything ends up being much more firefighting than setting these big goals. You're just putting out every fire every day. You know, what's the thing that rises to the top and is burning you the most, you know?
Right.
And so you're not always able to work on the cool stuff. So it's really good to hear that you all are able to make a strategic kind of plan and look further into the future with things.
Now, well, no, I think that's great. And I think that different levels of the company have different obligations on that, right? Those of us who are mm-hmm. much closer to the ground and doing the development and proofing things for printing, we ought to be thinking about, okay, what are we doing next, right? I think that the mm-hmm. leadership, and as middle management, kind of between the two, leadership ought to not care what the thing is today to get out. Yes. They ought to be looking. They ought to have a much further mm-hmm. horizon mm-hmm. that they're a vast horizon, as we might pun in the Starfinder parlance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, typically that's what you see from the upper management, is that they do have that bigger vision for what's going there. And I presume they have something that they've shared with you all, but you're saying that typically it's not pushed that far out right now.
It is not. Not on the creative project side. I don't know enough about business planning. I'm sure they know, for example, the exact dates of the next 4 Gen Cons, right? At least mm-hmm. because the trade show is very big for us. And I have known visibility into conversations with our distributors and the like. But on the creative side, we've always had a sense of, okay, what do we want to do next? And I think we're mm-hmm. pushing hard into, and what about after that? And what about after that? What about after that? And that's mm-hmm. great to see. That's something I feel like makes me excited about things that are coming much further along. Mm-hmm. And can create some more sort of job engagement, right? If you're the sort of person who is maybe not thrilled with what we're doing right this minute, but you're working there and you're like, oh, but I know, oh man, end of next year is going to be awesome. It's stuff squarely in my wheelhouse that I'd love to create and write for and get freelancers for and so on and so on. I mean, it's the kind of thing that can really keep you invested. And I think particularly with the rough couple months Paizo had, I think that's a real win for the company as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I'm hoping it keeps going forward in that direction. For me, I like to plan a little bit into the future, kind of have a sense for what's coming on. It does, like you say, it makes dealing with the day-to-day stuff a little bit more bearable, but also it kind of helps you shape what you're doing today, because you know where you're trying to get to. And that, you know, if you kind of backtrack, say, okay, if this is the end state, well, these are the interim milestones I need to hit in order mm-hmm. to get there.
So, yep, exactly.
Speaking of future planning, that's one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about today. You know, in our last episode, we had all these special guests from our Intrepid Heroes crew, and we were talking about wrapping up our Dawn of Flame adventure path, even though I literally just started posting the last book episodes up online. So there's a ways for the actual posting of the podcast to catch up to where we've been. But I'm looking forward to starting recording for the next one, Devastation Arc, which you've so graciously agreed to GM the entire thing.
Right, and which I've been sort of frantically reading and prepping in order to do just that.
Yes. So, you know, part of it, we're planning on coming up actually, it's like the day after tomorrow. So it'd be the day after, the day that this thing goes up, we're planning to have a kind of an initial session zero to talk about our characters and our classes and for the crew itself, what we're going to do. We're bringing in somebody new. I don't know if that we've formally announced that yet. Can we do that now?
I think I'm very excited to think we'll have her aboard. My friend and developer at Paizo, a stellar developer at Paizo, Eleanor Farron, is going to be coming. She actually wrote, we worked together on the Devastation Arc Adventure Path. She wrote Volume 2 and I wrote Volume 3, but she's been excited to come in and play, and I certainly hope that all works out. As you say, we finished up Dawn of Flame. We haven't yet started Devastation Arc, so we don't know if we're going to need some, you know, last-minute switching or anything like that, but the hope is that mm-hmm. we don't, and she'll be able to join us.
Yeah, that would be great. Who wrote the first book on that?
Jenny Jarzobski, which reminds me, I need to reach out to her because there's sort of a component of it that's a little bit no spoilers, right, for you especially, much less any others. But there's a component of it that's a little bit like a puzzle that I don't quite understand. Any book you sort of buy off the shelf, you just have to reread it a couple of times in order to figure it out. But I have the advantage of just being able to do an inter-office chat to Jenny and say, what did you mean by this puzzle? Help me out here.
Well, I was just thinking, if we had more room in our crew, we should have invited her too.
and then have one of them switch out for my adventure. So each one of us has somebody else running the adventure that we wrote.
Yeah, that would have been fun. But yeah, I think we're going to have six. So I think that seemed like a good amount last time. But anyway, you know, of our existing crew, I think only Raz and Koholo are going to be coming back.
Right.
And I think we're going to have four new characters. And so kind of in preparation of our session zero, I've been, you know, posting a little bit online and chatting with one of our other characters, you know, about what we might be doing. And I thought, you know, we could talk about do you come up with a level 13 character in Starfinder? So, you know, most players start at level one, kind of build all their way up. But when you have an AP that starts at level 13, goes through to 20, if you're starting it from scratch with a new character, you have to come up with something at level 13. And that's a lot different of a prospect than starting at level one and building all the way to 13.
Well, absolutely correct. But I think I want to drill down, because I think there's two slightly different questions here. And they are, how do I build a character who's level 13 to join a group, versus how do I work with my group that we build level 13 characters that are going to get along? You see what I mean? You see the difference there?
Yes.
I think our listeners might have to do either, right? If you're somebody who is found a Starfinder campaign that you're excited about joining, but they're all high level and you're kind of got to be on your own maybe they've given you some advice, right? Like, oh, I guess we don't really need a frontliner. Okay, well, I'll do something that's in a frontliner. But if you... Right. But if you're making up your own character sort of in isolation, then that's a slightly different manner of thinking than how do I do it if I'm talking to, you know, four other people who are also building a character at the same time.
Oh, certainly, certainly. I guess one of the things that is I thought it would be good to get into is how do you go from 0 to 13? Because I think that's like I spent yesterday leveling up a character who I hadn't played since May of 2020 to level 10. It was like level 6, right? I was building up to level 10. I had a bunch of GM credit on it because I was going to play that today. I ended up playing something else. And I thought, wow, this is actually kind of a time-consuming process to do that. And then I thought, wow, I got to go from 0 to 13 here. So I thought that would be good to talk about. And then you're right. The second part, kind of the integration, which is – we'll be doing on Tuesday. We started that a little bit as well, looking at who's staying, who's going, what we want to replace, what gaps we have. And we've talked about that a little bit in terms of party composition, but not at high level before.
Right, right. And I guess maybe there's a maybe if you're building into a party that there's it sort of bookends the actual character creation, because you might say at the front, oh, I feel like playing, you know, oh, we've kind of got an envoy. Well, I want to do sort of talky things, but we've got an envoy. Maybe I want to be kind of a real talky operative, right? Talking with the rest of the party will decide maybe what you want to build. And then once you built it, sort of talking with the party about, well, I took this powers for these types of situations. And, oh, I took something like that too. Okay, maybe I'll finesse mine.
Right.
But there's the meat of the middle, I think, is what you're getting at, which is how do you mechanically, how do you do it, right? If somebody says you're going to make a 13th level character, and where do you even start?
Right. And for me, that was kind of where I've been working on lately. And so I thought we'd talk about that a little bit. So there's two parts to this that I'm looking at. The first is kind of the character concept, you know, kind of how do you envision this character being at level 13, and then filling in kind of the steps to get there. Then there's the gearing, which is kind of a completely separate thing.
Totally, right? Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'll start with the concept, and I'm going to use mine as an example. So in our AP, we had Julikosti, who was a Vesk Bombard soldier, and he decided he wanted to try a different class, and we won't spoil that for anybody as yet. So I decided I want to build a frontliner. And so I'm toying with various frontliners right now, and I just so happen in society play to have two classic frontliners, one of it being a melee, level 13 melee soldier, the other being a level 13 Vanguard. So I have two level 13 characters already that I've built one level at a time through society play that gives me a sense of the things I like in these classes.
Okay.
And so based on that and knowing how the existing, like we have Kaholo is a frontliner who just likes to go toe-to-toe with things, right?
Right, yep.
Knowing that, I thought,
And she's staying, so that's going to still exist. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make something that would be durable to be up front as well. And so leaning towards Vanguard. But one of the things that I've been playing with a newer soldier that I built is this kind of this combination with a large creature with reach and then a feet boost, which feet boost came out in the character operations manual, that in lieu of taking a gear boost, a soldier can take a feet boost. And one of them in there that I really liked a lot was called Spinning Cleave.
Okay.
And I've mentioned that to you a little bit in the past. Basically, it allows you to cleave to any two creatures that are within your reach rather than adjacent.
Adjacent. They don't need to be standing next to each other as long as you can reach both of them.
Right. And so if you have a character with lots of reach, and so, again, a large character with reach, with a reach weapon, that gives you 15-foot reach. And so then if you have any characters within 15, any enemies within 15 feet of you, hey, you could do a cleave to them, which
you can hit any two of them.
All right. So it gives you a little bit more. Okay.
You still get the penalty for cleave, right? Because you're actually using cleave. So it's -2 to your armor class and it's a standard action to do and so on, so on.
Correct. And you can't use an unwieldy weapon. All those other caveats kind of play in there. Now, the interesting thing about Vanguard, again, having a level 13 Vanguard, at level 10, you also get reach as a Vanguard.
In kind of a stackable way?
It doesn't say it doesn't stack. Okay. It just says
makes sense.
Gain reach. So
reach is one of those rules components where if it doesn't stack, it says, rather than the types of components like different named types of bonuses where the default rule is they don't stack and you've got to find something around that. So
So that's, I don't even as a Vanguard, you don't even need to use a reach weapon then to get reach. So it increases that a little bit. The Vanguard itself is pretty tanky. They tend to have a lot of hit points because they're constitution based. The other neat thing you get at as a level 10 Vanguard, for example, is you can start adding. So initially a Vanguard, as you're going up, you add your constitution modifier to your damage, but not your strength. Right?
Okay.
At level 10, though, you get to add your strength as well.
I don't know that I love that, building from a Vanguard up from the beginning, because the class is kind of telling you, strength doesn't matter. And then very suddenly, strength suddenly matters.
Right. Well, that's your damage bonus, but not to your... So strength still matters to
your... Oh, you still need it to hit. I see.
Your to-hit modifier, right? So you still need that, because you're typically doing melee attacks. Though there is a new... I think there's a new... not in the character operation manual, but comes up subsequently that allows you to do entropic strikes at range, which I think would change that. So again, I'm kind of getting this notion, okay, I got 13 levels to work with. What's the good? I could go straight soldier. I could go straight Vanguard. I've done that for both. Can I combine the two of those to make something that would be a lot of fun? Now, to get the the feat boost on Soldier, I don't get a gear boost till level 3. So I have to at least get 3 levels of Soldier in order to get that feat boost, which is being substituted for a gear boost for spinning cleave. And that, you know, that's like one of the critical things about this for me. Because the nice thing about a Vanguard is, depending on which of the aspects you take, like there's one of them, which I'm probably going to take. If you strike multiple creatures in a round, you get an entropy point.
Oh, actually, okay.
I think it's even you just attack. I don't think you even have to hit.
Need to hit. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's obviously awesome for you.
Yeah. You know, so anyway, so just kind of forming that, getting the basics there and looking at the timing for things and then looking at the backstory. So I was talking to Rob Helm, who's had played Whiskey before, but is wanted to roll another character. And I mentioned I was looking to make a Dragonkin. One of the things about the Dragonkin is that they have a bonded partner. They're part of a bonded pair where there's some particular bonuses, and they kind of bond for life. And I said, well, one of the things that you could do if you wanted is I need a bonded partner. That it would be great if they were in the party so we could both take advantage of those bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking, okay, well, you know, traditionally in Triaxis, these bonded pairs with Dragonkins would be a Dragonkin and a Riforian.
Right.
I could build a backstory where, you know, my Dragonkin, you know, was a soldier, was out there fighting, had their partner die and was just devastated for that and decided that they wanted to do better in protecting their partner. So rather than continuing on with the soldier, they decided they want to go into Vanguard, which has certain abilities to help mitigate damage to those that they're fighting with.
Okay. Alrighty. And kind of a little bit of a tragedy in the backstory that's ended mm-hmm. up a positive with the other character. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Right. And then gaining a new partner and being really dedicated to help protect that partner.
And oh man, even worse if something happens to that partner. So
yes, yes, that would be, you know, and again, this is going to be real similar to the playoff that Julakoshi and Raz had before,
mm-hmm.
right? Where Raz was watching over Julakoshi and, you know, helping him move along. So we're just going to have a different couple characters doing that instead.
That makes sense. Well, and we don't yet know what the other characters are going to build in order to do that. Although, you know, to be honest, one of the things that's already been built is Raz and Kaholo, who've been through the Dawn of Flame adventure path together, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny because we all know as players how that went and what went on, but you know, in game, for Kaholo to say to Raz something like, "Yeah, sounds like something Whiskey would say,"
right?
I mean, that's an in joke, right? Between the two of them, we players get the joke, but between the two of the characters, that's an in joke.
Which will make it kind of fun, I think, for the two of them.
I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah. So anyway, that was kind of building the mechanics of it and then the backstory. And then, you know, filling it out, you know, the backstory started as a soldier. So I started with 3 levels of soldier. It was pretty straightforward, you know, picking a fighting style. I looked through all the different fighting styles. And the one that I think provided the most sense for the beginning, because my story was going to be that initially my character, Leroy, would just rush into battle. He was a blitz soldier. He would just kind of rush in. And because that really put his partner in danger. So now that he's kind of learned, Leroy is taking on a more deliberate approach to battle, switching over to Vanguard. So was originally a blitz soldier. So when you're doing a multi-class like this, so you'll go through whatever levels you're doing in the class. You take whatever your BAB is, your fortitude save, reflex save, will save, take those scores, right? So I have 3 levels. So I have a BAB of 3, fort save of 3, reflex save of 1, will save of 3. And then whatever your new class is, like you start from level 1, go all the way down, in this case, level 10, whatever the total is at the end of that, you add that to your total from the previous one. And the nice thing about Vanguard and Soldier is they will help balance out the Reflex and the Will save a little bit. Because soldiers are bad in Reflex saves. Vanguards are not as good at Will saves. They're both pretty good at Fortitude saves. So you end up getting a little balance there from those just those three levels.
Right, and in fact, classically speaking, and this goes back to even the third edition of D&D and multiclassing that goes on, levels divisible by three are the smart ones to stop at when you're multiclassing. Six in particular, 6 and 12 in particular, but also 3, 9, because those give you sort of across the board the best boost to your poor saving throws as well as your BAB, sort of, and things like that. So that's you're part of a long tradition looking at three levels and then stop.
Yes. You'll have to tell the story sometime of your super multi-class.
That's right. But to keep the focus on this, that helps sort of tell the story and build the abilities in a particular way. Absolutely, any of the classes are build very fine on their own. I don't think that it's going to be at all, sad to have Kaholo be a full 13 levels in Solarian or Raz. I think Raz is a full 13 levels in Envoy.
Yes, I think I think going straight, especially since they're going to level 20, they'll get to the high level. Level 18 is kind of like one of the final points for all the classes. They'll both get to that. I won't get to that with mine.
Right.
That's kind of the downside. So, no, for sure. And then from there, it's pretty much just kind of totaling up. Okay, I look at feats. I get one at level 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. Where do I want to get each of those? I get a combat feat at level 2. So that's kind of an extra feat I can add in there. So where do I want all those things to end up? Make sure I meet all the prerequisites for that. And then going through the Vanguard stuff, looking at levels 1 through 10, what are the various things to fill in there? Basically, then I can kind of level up one level at a time, knowing that at the end, this is what I want to be good at. Right? So that's a little straightforward.
Yep.
The other thing to really look at, though, is the attribute spread. So, where do you start? Where are you going to put your 5th level, 10th level, in this case, because I'm only up to 13th level attribute bumps? And then what personal upgrades might I be able to have? Being level 13, typically you can get core book plus 1 for things. I can get Mark 1, Mark 2, Mark 3 level attribute personal upgrades for the attributes as well.
Right.
So,
well, and now keep in mind when you're building, this is part of the tricky part of building, rather than jumping right to the end and saying, oh, well, I've got a, I know I'm going to be putting my ability increases into my strength, for example, right? So I'm going to start with a 16. I know my first bump is going to get that from 16 to 18 and my second one's going to get it from 18 to 19, right? For example.
Right.
You can't then go and pick nothing but feats that require a strength of 19. You have to kind of look back in time and think, all right, well, what did I pick back when my score was lower? And how do I go from there? That's to the extent people make errors in this type of high-level character creation, it's assuming the end result was true all the way through, and that's not the case.
Right, yeah. In a prime example of that, so I'm picking a Dragonkin, which has a -2 to dexterity. Right. So I'm not going to get, say, until level 5, I don't get a dexterity of 13 or higher. Well, I like mobility and spring attack on my melee characters. Well, you need 13 dexterity to take mobility, which means mobility can't come until level 5. Right. You just won't have
it. Yep. You don't have the dex for it.
Right. You won't have the dex for it. Now, fortunately, is a large character. I'm going to take tight fit early on, so I don't have to worry as much about really narrow spaces. Because I'm taking cleave and then I'm getting spinning cleave, right? I'm also looking at taking Great Cleave, which means then I can get multiple cleaves, anybody within range. So that helps balance out some of those prerequisites early on, getting things that don't have prerequisites where I'm really weak at, for example. You know, things like that. Once you get to level, like level 9, pretty much you've met most of them for the basic things. It's only like deflecting attacks and stuff like that. There's certain ones that you need to have a much higher BAB, for example, as a soldier, or that are combat related. So then you have to worry about it. But your more general feats, the prereqs aren't as high. But that's true. You know, building it, I mean, you can finally get there, but the order for how you have to do that, you have to be conscious of. Otherwise, you end up stacking all these high-level feats that, quite frankly, you were not meeting the prerequisites for
exactly. early on. Yep, right. Yep, exactly the case.
Yeah. And the other, I'll say the other thing you're going to be mindful of, and you kind of touched on this, is what level your attribute is in when you get your bumps, if you can increase it by 1 or 2, right? Because if you start out with 16, then at fifth level, you can bump it up to 18. But if you start out with 17, 18, in my case, I could even start out with 20. I guess 18 is the max you can do it.
Right. Oh. Then it only, but no, you have plus four as a Dragonborn,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, +4. So I could do 20,
right?
But then I only get +1, +1, you know.
Right.
So getting your most bang for your buck is actually one of the things I've been looking at here. And it turns out starting it at, like I'm looking at 16 strength, 11 dex, 15 con, and that's my bump. Actually, there's going to be one more in there for a theme as well, right? So you get 11 points to play with. So that at the end, I can end up with 23 strength, 17 dex, 24 con, 16 intelligence, something like that, you know. But again, thinking of how you're going to add these points at different levels, I think is important.
Exactly.
One of the things I came across using both the PDFs that automatically tally things and also online, when you multi-class and your classes have different skill points per level, those don't readily take those into account. They don't like it when you change. Like a soldier has 4, but a vanguard has like 6.
So you've changed for 10 of your 13 levels.
Right. So you have to, it's kind of kludgy when you do these systems that automatically add those. So there's something to be mindful of is there as well. So that's kind of, you know, going through building the character to level 13, things that I had to think about beforehand, and then as I leveled up. And then gear is actually another interesting thing. So if you use the wealth by level, which is in the core book, page 391,
yep.
level 13, you get 225,000 credits, of which 35%.
Which is 78,750.
Towards armor, and 35% towards a weapon.
Right.
Now, that's really not bad, because at level 13, basically you can get a level 13 or 14 weapon for that amount.
Right.
But that's
and
spending
still,
a lot
and
of...
And still have the 75,000 left, which is neither an armor or a weapon, in order to get the Mark III upgrade.
Right, right. Now, the nice thing about a... well, it's not so nice, but it's sort of nice. But a Vanguard is you actually don't need a weapon, because your Entropic Strike does damage all by itself. And in fact, if you're using a weapon, if you want to use your Entropic abilities with it, which are pretty cool, it's limited to the amount of your Entropic Strike. And so I was looking at, oh, I'll get a level 11 swoop hammer or something, right? And I can do, I think I was looking at swoop hammer. Well, that's like 5d10. That's great. Oh, I can't add all my Entropic stuff to that. My Entropic Strike is only 3d6.
So that's as much as you're limited to with that.
Yeah, if I'm using my Entropic Strike with that.
With the swoop hammer, yes.
With the swoop hammer. So if I want to get the benefits of the extra reach, I want to get the benefits of extra damage, I can add on. I want to get the benefit of attacking EAC versus KAC, which Entropic Strike does. So there's quite a few trade-offs. And honestly, until I started going through all this, I didn't pay attention to it because I never used a weapon before with my my level 13 Vanguard I had. I was just using Entropic Strike. So now that's one of the things I'm looking to balance is like, oh, I might be able to forego certain benefits to do more pure damage if I want. Or if I'm needing to hit more readily, so using an energy type of attack rather than a kinetic attack, or if I need a force effect, which I can have with my Entropic Strike, or I want to add additional damage, I could do that. Or if I'm unarmed, somebody takes my weapon, right? So trying to balance it out. And so I won't max out my weapon, but I probably get a high damage weapon that does that has reach, for example.
Right, so because that's the key piece that you want to be able to pull stuff off of, yeah.
Right, right, right. And when I do that, then I forgo, you know, I'll forgo that extra damage sort of thing.
Yep.
Or the extra abilities for that. So anyway, so these are, you know, again, this is just an example of me, my thought process, kind of going through, trying to build a character that I think will be a good frontliner, have some good synergy with our existing frontliner, Koholo. Because as a Vanguard, if you're adjacent to somebody, you can have them that you can designate them as somebody that you can mitigate damage to and a whole bunch of other things as well. Which one of the things that we saw with two frontliners going toe to toe is they both took a lot of damage in the past.
Right. Well, and you will have to think about how the pieces you're using for your character play into that, because if you've prioritized, as you say, mobility and spring attack. So if you're thinking, well, some of the time I'm not even going to be there. Well, if I'm protecting, some of the time I will. That gives a lot of tactical flexibility.
Yeah.
One piece of that I did want to bring up is that I think everybody, when we were sort of looking around at characters that we had and how much we had gained throughout the adventure path that we'd played, we were pretty dramatically under the 225,000 that 13th level characters get. I actually added this up for Koholo just today. And of the 225,000 she's expected to have, she has about 22,000.
Well, did you include everything 10%. That she got rid of, though?
No. Yeah. But everything that she got sold, she then... And I didn't look at her current amount of actual money on hand, which matters, too. But anything she got rid of, she then turned around into buying what she bought. So,
wow, I'm shocked that she must have had like really low level armor then to be cheap.
Well, remember we have two characters who use heavy armor,
right?
And generally speaking, Julika, we did not find any heavy armor in the whole last, maybe even the last third of the campaign. I think there was the last heavy armor we got was near the beginning of book five, maybe, and Julikashti got it. And so Koholo hadn't had any armor. There were no armor options for at least a couple of levels, three, maybe even four levels. And Koholo hadn't taken one since before that. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's easy enough to get right up to the 225 by, all right, get a top line armor and a one of the ability boosts, right? The augmentations. And there goes all the money. But
well, that's 150,000 just those two, probably.
Just those two, because of the limitation of being not being able to spend more than 14th level on an armor and no more than 78,750 on it. And then things around the edges, right? You want to be able to get armor upgrade. She can slot into her solar weapon. She's got really good that have actually been super useful for her abilities for her solar weapon. There's kind of things you want to get around the edges. But for the most part, the thing that really surprised me is how effective Koholo had been, especially all the way through that last adventure, with being what the system would call very dramatically underleveled.
Right. Under-geared.
Under-geared, under-equipped. Yeah. You're right.
Well, the big thing with a Solarian is that they don't have to buy a weapon, and their max weapon damage continues to scale.
Correct. Correct.
I think that's what got her by pretty well, and maybe a fairer balance to what we were doing might have been give Kaholo the high armor and give Jokashi the high weapon then or something. You know, it doesn't right. matter at this point. You know,
I don't think any of them were upset by what they got. So
yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting. You know, when you look at a lot of the characters that we run, you know, if you look at operatives, if you look at technomancers, mystics, envoys, you know, not very gear dependent, quite
frankly.
Right.
That's right.
You know, it's your frontliners, your big time damage dealers and big time tanks, right? So damage soakers that are much more gear dependent in the way the game rolls right now.
Yep. I think that's absolutely right. Although anybody who has money to spend can certainly find all sorts of interesting bits of tech, bits of hybrid device. I mean, there's a lot of sort of fun stuff you can get out there. So I think that's one of the things that's really neat about the game is that no matter what kind of character you play, you can plan on having some fun shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot. You know, I was just looking at, you know, for my other character I was leveling up, who's a mechanic. It's like, man, there's all kinds of cool, you know, weapon fusions and armor upgrades you can get when, you know, I was a prototype. You know, if you have a prototype mechanic, you don't have to worry about your weapon, but you can get all the extra stuff, you know?
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah. Well, I really look forward to this. And I'm kind of curious to see how our other classes are going to come together and what the makeup of the crew is going to be for the next book.
Yeah, I think we'll see. This will be so. Tune in I don't know, several weeks.
It's a long time. Don't say anything about tuning in.
That's right. That's right. I mean, tune in because it's interesting to see how we end the the last campaign. So
yes, oh, for sure. Now, do you have any concerns as a GM for us as players and what we're building at level 13?
Well, no, because part of what not really. Because the whole point of this is like to get together and have fun with friends, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that there has been on a system that I know substantially better, right? I feel like I've got a very finely tuned sense of what character abilities can overthrow the rules in a lot of cases. I don't have that much of a sense in Starfinder at high level play, and I'm excited to get it, frankly. One of the things that is constantly the case with adventure paths is the universe was sort of frozen in rules options at the time the adventure path came out. So when the Devastation Arc came out, none of the things that have since come up, you know, the tech revolution or for example, or any of that stuff was an option. It wasn't an option for me to use when I was writing it. It wasn't an option for the developers to even have on hand when they were developing it. And so some of the abilities in some of these later books that came later are so unexpected in the adventure path that they can actually make some encounters, maybe even break down. I don't know if we'll see those. I think two of the ways that I've seen GMs mitigate this is to first lock the character options into the same universe, right?
Right.
To look at the Devastation Arc chapter 3 and say, oh, well, here's the month and year this came out. You may use no resources more recent than that. That's a little bit disappointing if you were like, you know, really excited about building a precog or something because you were excited about the latest books and what they bring. And who wouldn't be? It's increasingly awesome stuff. The second way that I've seen GMs mitigate that is the plus one book rule. You can get I've often seen it as, okay, you can, when you're building your character, use the core rule book and you can pick one other book and build all your stuff from that. Because a lot of the rules become more powerful in an accretive way when more of them sort of stack on top of each other. Well, I think this feat from here and this alternate class feature from here and this alternate race feature from here, because the three of them synergize together to create sort of an overwhelming thing. And that kind of tamps down on that ability. I think that that does a real disservice. You know, Core Rulebook Plus One does a pretty big disservice if you want to play a class that came out in a later book, right? If you wanted to play a biohacker, well, then it kind of ought to be the book your class came in, obviously, maybe plus one. So maybe Core Rulebook plus your class book plus one, or your class book plus one, something like that, to make sure that people can at least, even within some bounds, have the ability that they're, the ability to play around with different components of the game, but without being able to mix and match everything. But I don't think that that's necessary. And I think that if it does become necessary, I'm confident enough in my GM abilities to be able to sort of fix things on the fly. And to the extent they do become necessary, well, then I'll know for next time, right? That, maybe trying to put a fence around character options is going to be something that's wise to keep the game fun for everybody, balanced enough that it's fun for everybody. So,
yeah, that's, you know, that's one of the things. As I was looking at my character, I'm not locked into doing this. I actually thought about going straight soldier and just trying a new soldier fighting style to see how that would work. So I'm not really quite sure. I know I want a soldier component to it. I don't know. The Vanguard's a little bit more complicated because you got to keep track of entropy points and then expending them and stuff like that. But it has a lot of other neat little flavor to it that I kind of like. So,
well, and that can be, I mean, that's part of the fun right there as well. So I don't want to deny anybody the ability to sort of really dig into their mechanics and see the fun stuff that they can do with what they've got. And so, yeah, I think, I mean, absolutely. Let's give it a try. We're not adversarial in this, right?
Yeah. It's not trying to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's well, let's see what kind of awesome things this system can do. I feel like not only our listeners, but us, right, are kind of seeing this high level stuff in action over a longer period of time for the first time, and that's fun on its own, right? So,
yeah, for sure. All right, well, I'm looking forward to this. You know, I was just looking at their schedule and. The last episode we're doing of the year is our next one. Mm-hmm. It comes out the 28th of December.
Oh.
Are you going to be around to record for that one?
I am. You know, work's been kind of heavy. All of this scheduling thing, you know, certainly doesn't change the fact that we've got current projects to do. I was mentioning to my boss the other day, you know, when it's just general, oh, hey, you know, who among you folks are taking time off between now and the end of the year? I mentioned, I'm not taking any days off. Oh, you're not taking any working days off. No, I'm not taking any days off, right? I had to put in a few hours today on Sunday. I had to put in a couple hours yesterday. I'm thrilled with what I'm doing, and that's the thing that makes it really fun. But no, I'm around. we're not traveling. Right. I got plenty of work to do. So even the 28th works for me. How about yourself? Are you making plans to go anyplace or?
No, my daughter's coming down and, we're going to be hosting here. So not much. I was just thinking our next episode, I'm hoping Galactic Magic is out, but I thought maybe we could do a recap of Starfinder for the year. Kind of all the stuff that came out, touch on them, eat them a little bit, something like that.
I was just talking about fixing a month in time and, you know, what comes before, what comes after. We can do that and call it the wrap up for 2021. I think that would be kind of fun.
Yeah. Can you get that schedule for us?
I sure can.
All right. That helped me a lot because I can look at my shelf, but my memory's not that good.
Yeah, right. Mine either. I wouldn't trust myself looking at my shelf either. So.
All right. That sounds, I look forward to that.
Great.
Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.